We're cruising with the top down. That's this way. I feel like it. I saw a lot of tops down today. So that's y'all's song, okay? That is this week's Artist of the Week. It is trumpeter, arranger, and founding member of Earth, Wind, and Fire, the one and only Mr. Leslie Drayton. Hello, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I'm glad to be able to be available to do this interview. And actually, when you said you were playing Cruising with the Top Down, that is actually my favorite tune on that CD.
Oh, okay. All righty then. Yeah, today's a perfect day here. I know it's going to be a little warm. And I've seen, on my way to work today, I did see a lot of folk with them down, so y'all go pick that up.
Okay.
It
rained all night in Houston, so that wasn't an option.
Oh, no question. No question about it. Well, I am very happy to have your time and to be with you. This is your first time being in the WFSK Spotlight as Artist of the Week. So we welcome you in and are just tickled to death to hear more about your new project, what you've been doing. You've been around for some time, and there's some things I wanted to catch up with you on and see, you know, your thoughts and et cetera. Now, you say you're in Houston?
Yes. Okay. Been living here just a bit over 4 years.
Okay. Aren't you a native of L.A. or something?
I am. I grew up in Los Angeles, and except for being in Houston, I lived in Denver for about 7.5 years at the end of the 80s through about 1996. But, yeah, I'm from Los Angeles.
Why did you decide to move, you know, towards the South and everything?
Well, I got married 22 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is from Houston.
Mm.
And although she had been away for about 40 years, we would come and visit quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I started looking around. I started thinking about where I was in this time in life. And Houston offers some great advantages for seniors.
Mm.
And just in general, there's no state tax.
Mm-hmm.
There's great advantages for homeowners.
Right.
And I always tell people that moving from California, gasoline was $1 cheaper a gallon.
Mm.
So all those things put together, and I started looking at it. I said, hey, we could deal with a relaxed lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
As long as there's an airport there, I can get to where I need to get to.
Right.
And so we made the decision, just a bit over 4 years ago, and we're enjoying it.
Well, that's wonderful. I know Houston is really, you know, has become quite the mecca for people in music and in entertainment, so I'm not surprised. And, of course, the cost of living does help. It makes a big difference.
Oh, yes. Well, some parts of it, real estate's cheaper. When you go to the supermarket, the prices are about the same as California.
Uh-huh.
But it is... The advantages outweigh the disadvantages.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and having lived in Los Angeles all of my life, it's, you know, not to say it had run its course,
mm-hmm.
but the things that people like about California and Los Angeles, I grew up, so I just took it for granted. So
mm-hmm.
let's try something different.
Yeah.
And that's what we did.
Wow.
I spoke with a person just before I left who was from Houston, and he said, man, that's God's country. And I said, what do you mean? He said, man, on a clear day, there's no better day, there's no better
uh-huh.
environment to be in. So on a day when there's no clouds in the sky,
yeah.
and it's not too hot and not too humid, it's close to perfect.
Oh, wow. Well, one of these days I have to check it out. I know some folks there and stuff I've interacted with, but I'll definitely have to do that. Now, this is your 12th or 13th project, Leslie?
13th, I believe.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, started in 1980.
Wow. And since you come from the Wayback Machine, and that's a good thing, do you... bring some of that flavor to your latest release, Changing Landscapes album?
I do. Some of the things are fairly subtle. Each one of the tunes
mm-hmm.
has a story involved, and that was part of it. A lot of those reflections back on certain things that happened
mm-hmm.
Throughout my life. But my experiences started with big band and certainly with R&B.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little big band there except on the tune Rude the Templar, where there's mm-hmm. an interlude there that simulates some of the big band sound.
Mm-hmm.
What I did do on this one is I experimented with subtle changes in harmony.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings the jazz experience
mm-hmm.
into it, just in subtle ways, just kind of experimenting with different ways to move harmonies
mm-hmm.
around.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a culmination of everything I've ever done,
mm-hmm.
but the title also signifies that, yes, we are in, at that point, 2019,
mm-hmm.
2020, and let's embrace the change that's happened on how we make music, how we consume music, how we sell music,
right.
et cetera, et cetera. And it's been a nice journey beginning in March and how things have changed
mm-hmm.
and even how people are consuming music. We found out that our distributor closed down their warehouse,
mm.
and so physical CDs were not available at Amazon.
Mm.
They had to come straight to the website, which that was an interesting lesson to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And things have changed, but that's fine. We're rolling with it. We've been at it for a while, and we understand that things do evolve.
Well, and let me ask you that, since that is the case, the revenue from it comes straight to you, though, if it's on your site for sale versus going.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Actually, everything that I've released
uh-huh.
has always been on a label that I owned.
Okay.
There's one recording that is available on Spotify
uh-huh.
that I did for Island Records, and they decided to shelve it for over 20 years,
mm.
actually almost close to 30 years, and I saw that it started to appear last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But all of those have always been my independent label.
Mm-hmm.
So all the revenue does come to me, but with streaming and the way streaming works, it takes a little while for it to get to me. But with a physical CD, yes, they come to the website, they make the purchase.
Yeah.
We do it through PayPal, and the revenue comes directly to me.
Well, that's all right. Cut out all the middlemen.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's there actually from beginning back
uh-huh.
in the 80s. You know, we used to have distributors. There are no middlemen anymore.
That's true.
That kind of goes in the digital domain, so
yeah.
middleman has been cut out
yeah, yeah.
a lot of ways.
Well, the company that's, you know, get theirs first.
Yes.
Before you. Yeah,
yes.
That's the new middleman, I guess.
Yes.
Now tell our audience, Leslie, who wrote and produced everything, and imagine you, but who else is on the project with you?
Okay, so what I did, I found a couple of younger musicians here in Houston that I wanted to feature.
Uh-huh.
The drummer is Marcus Alexander, who's from Houston. The keyboard player is A.J. Moyler. The percussionist is one of the OGs. His name is Al Pagliuso, who's playing percussion. But I also used one of my older friends from L.A., Dell Atkins, has been on, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 of my projects. He's in L.A.
Hmm.
He's played bass. And I had a former student that I had about 10 years ago when I was teaching at community college. And he and I have stayed connected. And he wrote a rap to the tune called, what is that one? Infinite Wisdom. And he popped up last year when I was in L.A., and I said, man, I want you to do something. He said, I still got that rap that I wrote. I said, okay, man, I'm sending you a track. Make sure it's clean. Make sure it's positive,
please,
and I can use it. So he's a former student from 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and we kept it kind of close in with just a limited amount of musicians there.
Mm.
I was somewhat reluctant to have an association with a studio here in Houston. I hadn't found one. And I did follow someone's suggestion. I
uh-huh.
found a studio here and an engineer who had been around the last 30 years or so. He and I connected from first 10 to 15 minutes that we were in the studio. And that was a blessing.
Mm.
So that's it. The photographer who did the artwork is someone I found here in Houston. Let's see, who else do we have? And my promotion man, believe it or not, is in Detroit. He's someone that we've had an association for over 30 years. Goes back to the big band days. And there's one more element, someone who helps me with social media. He was a former colleague of work that from my association with the Grammy Foundation, and he helps with the social media. Okay. And he's in Huntsville, but he knows Nashville because he went to was it Middle Tennessee State University? Is it there? He knows you.
I'm sure. <He's>
talking... He told me all about your program. So that's my crew.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of the folks, you know, that are in and around, it's, you know, circulate around the same ones and stuff. So I'm not surprised. He's probably done some stuff with me here at the station before.
Well, he went to school there, so he told me all about the Thursday program, and, man, you're going to enjoy it. She's been doing it. He gave me your background.
Well,
I'm in good hands today.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Yeah, Leslie, not the program. I run the whole station, so I do the music. That's how I come you here, amongst all the other stuff. But anyway, you have I figured the changing landscapes represented, because what I've noticed about a lot of you guys and ladies in the business is that your titles usually represent something that is happening or within your life or your circle or something like that. Now, this has, 11 cuts, 12 cuts?
I think they're just 10.
Okay. See, you know, sometimes y'all got to number this stuff, okay?
Right.
Because I was like, one, two, three. I think we're playing a couple of them. Golden Aspen, which was your first single out.
Yes.
And Changing Landscapes is in our system as well. And I want to say TBT is in there.
Okay. Those are good too.
Yeah.
All of them are good too.
Yeah. And I like that Cruising with the Top Down too, so it very well could end up. What is the TBT? To be determined or something?
Truth be told.
Oh, and say yes, amen.
So, story behind that, you know, we all have experiences. Or we've observed things.
Yeah.
That sometimes we can correct people on their misinformation, and then sometimes we have experiences that we just kind of keep close to the vest.
Okay.
And we share with very few people. So that's, it came up, TBT is something I wrote in about 30 minutes, about a year and a half ago.
Mm.
And I kept saying, well, is this going to be truth be told or TBT? And kept going back and forth. And somebody said, just leave it TBT.
And don't mess up a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That would end up being, yeah, truth be told.
Well, it's and it's very catchy, and it worked well for us because it's in the house here. Now, let me go back into some history with you, because you've been some decades in this business. Let me get some observations from you. I heard what you said a second ago about the distribution side and things have changed.
Uh-huh.
But you go back to the Wayback Machine in the 70s and all. And what stark differences do you see, and what do you miss, or do you miss, from the way, you know, things have progressed over the decades to the way they are now in the 2000s?
Okay, just really going back to when I started, we miss opportunities to perform live, and also the opportunities of apprenticeship and mentorship that existed in our community with the music. I was fortunate enough to be mentored by a lot of the older musicians who actually sometimes we thought they were very hard on us, but actually if they saw you had some potential, they would press you a little bit to see if you had, we'd say if you had any heart. Mm. If you come back and deliver, they would let you in a little more. And I miss that. And we also miss the performance opportunities in the smaller venues. And I understand it's economics, but that was also our way that we learned. Mm-hmm. I spent some time teaching at a community college, and that's fine. The band would rehearse once a week. They were kind of like, I say, hey, you guys are in this big dysfunctional family. I had the ability to write music for them, so it was kind of like Duke Ellington's concept. I wrote music for them that they could play, and they always sounded really good doing that. And when concerts would happen, we'd fill up this concert hall, and people want to know, well, how did you do that? I said, they promoted the concert. It's their concert. It's their music.
Yeah.
And they went out in the community. They got people to come and see, hear them play.
Uh-huh.
And but I think those are the things that I'm missing most.
Huh.
Just the interaction, the personal interaction that we don't get to do anymore.
Yeah.
I've accepted the change in how we record the music. Someone was asking me about tape the other day, and said, man, do you have a reel-to-reel tape recorder? I said, no, not anymore, man. I said, I had one way 50 years ago. But he says, man, my dad had a reel-to-reel. He really liked the way it sounded. I said, yeah, it has a great sound. I said, but people don't consume music like that anymore. I mean, everything's on a small speaker. It's compressed. It's on a phone.
Yeah.
And you have to evolve with that as far as how we consume the music. But just that interaction is something that we're missing
right
now. Hopefully, when we come out of the crisis, we can get back to, I don't even call it the intimacy, I guess smaller audiences.
Yeah.
And hopefully through the, I guess I'll call it the quarantining, that there'll be a lot of new music to come out. And, you know, with the social condition being the way it is, hopefully people will be inspired to report on the social condition through the music and the art.
Yeah. Well, you know, I notice a lot of people, it's like so much music coming in. And I mention this regularly because, you know, I mention it so that I won't get more, but I just mention it because it's real. And a lot of you guys, you know, writers, producers, recording artists and et cetera, that are in your homes and home studios or wherever you are really releasing a lot. You know, it's just a lot.
Yes.
And people who have probably wanted to be a musician, they're releasing. And, you know, it's like, Lord. And, you know, to make the decisions, you know.
I'm sure that's difficult for you.
It
with a lot of stuff.
Lord. I mean, there are no words to describe. and to me, it's worse, you know, than I could ever recall it now during this particular time frame. I knew that spring into summer is when a lot of stuff, you know, shoots out. But this has been an unbelievable because there's more ways and modes to get it to a station now, see?
Yes. And that's the other thing. I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, now I'm still up into this project, album-oriented. Okay, I'm going to put this together. There's 10 tunes. People are now releasing singles. They're doing videos. They're doing stuff. So it's down to singles. They're doing videos. You can do all of that stuff fairly easily now.
Right.
They can get by, and I can't say get by, but, you know, an EP with 4 tunes is sometimes enough. Now, what it does, it keeps them evolving. It keeps the music fresh. They don't have to wait as long to release things.
Right.
But I guess from your perspective, it's like you're inundated with everything.
Yeah. And if you send me 4, I have to holler at you. Because I don't, I mean, you know, I need something besides that.
Right.
You know, it's not fair to a 4-song project and I get a 12 over here. You know,
right.
I'm like, nah. I just, you know, I'm just different like that. And I mean, I get them for the single, but I don't, you know, I won't probably do a spotlight on them. Right. Yeah, because it don't turn out like folks think.
And many of the stations I found out through my promotion, man, they don't want the CD. They say, send me an MP3. Send me two or three MP3s. That's enough for me. I said, okay. So it's changing that way, too, about how you send it out.
Yeah.
As opposed to, hey, I'm going to put it in the mail. You'll have it next week.
Yeah.
You have the music meeting. You listen. It's because you have so much.
Yes.
There has to be a balance some way.
It does. But, well, and let me say for your label and your team, you know, we want CDs here because we did, the reason why is because, you know, we receive waves and MP3s.
Right.
And what ended up happening at the very beginning was, you know, there ain't so much room, the places that you can keep this stuff, you know. It became a lot of delete, because it comes so much that easily forgotten is what it ended up being. So, you know, I told the promoters and the labels and things that I work with, I'm like, look, I'm not fishing through 1,000 emails. You know, I don't have time, but I got your project laying right here on my desk on my right now stacks. And I got it in my hand. If something, because technically stuff goes wrong sometimes in the download process, or you know, time out on it, and then you gotta waste time. I'm like, dude, I got an extra hour to get this done. I don't need to be sending you an email. Wait a day or so when I'm back, and you know this. I mean, it's like, oh Lord. So I told him, I said, you know, we are a reporter, and I said, you know, just let me tell you how it's going to happen here. Because at first, you know, everybody wanted to go straight, you know, no albums, no CDs. And it wasn't working for a lot of stations. It just wasn't. Because we were getting a gazillion of these things. And they started taking up a lot of space. Every station does it different. You know, in this arena that I'm doing, I'm a one-woman band. I don't have to have no meeting. Just me and my headphones, we get together in my office plugged in while I'm working on something else. I'm, you know, listening while I'm doing five other things, because that's how it is. This is nonprofit here. So we don't have the upper room experience. And WFSK plays a lot of music.
I'm glad.
Yeah, we play a lot of music. That's just Death Station. I don't have time for, you know, the foolishness. We're trying to get down in here. And so that's why you on here.
I am delighted to be included.
Now, Leslie, I cannot, being the consummate fan I am of a lot of these groups that you have very much been a part of, I cannot go another minute without asking you about some of this fire in your background.
Okay.
Oh my God, man. Earth, Wind, and Fire. Talk about it. Let's hear it.
I was in the original band, and I think that formed in 1970.
Yeah.
There were five or six of them that came from Chicago, and one of my mentors knew Maurice, and Maurice wanted to put the others together, and he said, call Leslie. You know, in 1970, there were a handful of us, like, that were the hot guys around L.A., you know, it's different now. And we met, he kind of told me what he wanted to do with the band, and he says, I want to add these people, and three of us were in a band together. Michael Beal, actually Alex Thomas ended up, he was the first trombonist in the band, and me, we were in a band, and there was a tenor saxophone player, Carl Randall's passed away. He was the saxophone player. He's someone that I had known from high school, and we started to get together and just rehearsing, actually, at Michael Beale's house. Michael Beale was the son of a doctor, and we used to go up in Baldwin Hills and rehearse there. And things evolved. I did the first two albums with them. And actually, I was looking the other day, I had forgotten. We also recorded the music for Sweetback's Badass Song. Yeah, we did the music for that. So I think I ended up doing three projects with them before I moved on.
Wow. So are you on Serpentine Fire?
No.
Okay.
I'm on the albums that are on Warner Brothers.
Okay.
So one of them is called Earth, Wind, and Fire, and the other one is, I can't think of the name of it. I don't know if it's Last Days of Time. Which one that would, someone always reminds me, but those first two.
Oh, wow. So will you all go back and look in your collections?
It's been, I didn't read it, but someone said that Maurice, the horn sound, I'm credited with developing. And that evolved on a larger scale once I left, but I was experimenting. There again, I come from having a big band, and I always wanted to have a lot of horns in the band.
Yeah.
They were pretty open to allow me to, when they would record, we used a larger horn section, and that just evolved, and that's actually became part of their signature sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, I think around 1972, and I moved on, and actually I was introduced at that time to Marvin Gaye.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't start working with him then, but believe it or not, Marvin was a big jazz fan.
Mm.
And my musical mother, I call her my musical mother, was a great trombonist and arranger by the name of Melba Liston.
Mm-hmm.
And Melba and I had a band together, and we pooled our resources together, being entrepreneurial, and we did a demo. And Marvin bought those tapes in hopes of starting this record company at one time. That didn't come to pass, but we kept this relationship going. And in 1974, when he did the first live album, I did an arrangement for that one, the one in Oakland. And then subsequently, when he started traveling, he reached out to me to be the musical director and conductor, and I did that for 3 years.
Wow.
And that was a wonderful experience.
I'm sure. I'm sure with all those women screaming and hollering and stuff.
that's where TBT comes in.
Yes. Now, definitely, I know y'all were having a good time back then.
We did.
And for the audience to know, you probably heard Leslie's horn on a lot of your R&B stuff, too. Because you did the horn for the Gap Band.
Yep.
And you also for the recording artist Sylvester. And what other Gap Band stuff were you on? You did a lot with them.
I can't, at that point I was doing studio work, so I don't know exactly what things.
A bunch.
However, you mentioned Sylvester. I did a lot of work with Harvey Fuqua. Sylvester's manager, and Harvey also was the manager for New Birth. And I did string arrangements 1972 or so on Been Such a Long Time in Wildflower. As time went on, I worked with Harvey on different projects, and when he started working with Sylvester, he reached out to me to do the horns and strings for Sylvester, and the first couple of things with Two Tons of Fun, who became the Weather Girls. Now we're going to jump up to 2020. There's a movie that's going to be produced on Sylvester's life that's in production. And the producer reached out to me to be musical consultant and arranger and conductor for that. So I think I'm about the last one standing of anyone that had a connection. I wasn't that close to the camp. I would go in and do the work and leave, but there's some things I do remember. Sylvester did a live album at the Opera House, and I conducted that, and I think that would be actually one of the centerpieces of this movie that's being done, and that was late, what, like 79, uh-huh. about 82, that worked with Sylvester.
Wow. So when is the movie coming out?
That, I think because of the shutdown, I think things got
okay,
slowed
got
down.
You.
But
okay.
I think they'll go into production sometime the end of the year.
Okay.
So
okay.
he's moving, he would have moved a lot quicker, but things shut down at the end of March, and I don't know how things are opening up in L.A. In fact, when it gets down to the music, I'm going to kind of suggest, hey, why don't we do it in Houston? But
of course.
We'll see, I won't have that kind of control. Well, since I found that studio and that engineer that I work with, I'm very comfortable here. In fact, that engineer is probably the most comfortable engineer I've worked with in my life. Uh-huh. It's like, here he is. I think, okay, or either he's got to come to L.A. with me. Get it done. But, yeah, so that will be... Who knows? When I speak to the producer of the movie,
yeah,
he says, you know, naturally everything's going to be tomorrow. But, you know, I kind of know things don't move that quickly.
Right.
So, definitely. Maybe in the next year and a half,
okay,
it should be out.
Yeah, because everybody's trying to readjust to the, things the way they are.
And we can't do, if music has to be re-recorded, we can't do it from home. That's not going to work. We are not going to be able to do it by Zoom. So right. we need to go somewhere where everybody's going to be face-to-face.
That's true.
And so we just got to wait till things open up.
Yeah, yeah.
To be able to do that. So that's exciting.
Oh, yeah.
I've known about it for about six or seven months.
Yeah. Man, I mean, there's so much. I mean, I know I'm out of time and everything. I was like, oh, my God, this cat's got so much history here, Lord.
Let's do a part two.
I mean, seriously. Well, see, that's why I wanted you on. And, because a lot of times the listeners are like, they only know the top names or sometimes. Well, I don't know what. They know different things. But because I'm like, Leslie Drayton, I know him from one of the old groups from Wayback Machine. And then I went on my brain searching, and I was like, that's the dude that used to play on the Earth, Wind, and Fire music on the early ones that came out. And that was when they first had come out. And I'm like, oh, Lord. Let me call this brother.
I'm glad it struck America.
Oh, yeah. I respect, man. I respect. Yeah, yeah. And the listeners, it's a gas for them. Because so many of them, they love the artists of the week that they get to hear, you know, the things that you all do and the stories and you know, the musical journeys, you know what I'm saying? That's their release. So, man, Leslie, this has been so cool. I cannot begin to tell you. And I'm definitely going to, you know, I got your number now, brother, okay?
Okay. I'm only a phone call away.
Yes, I got your number. I got your people, your team, and the whole shebang. But I just really appreciate so much your talent and these decades of your talent and your skills. And, you know, for us music lovers, we appreciate all the music that you have been a part of.
Thank you.
Now, tell them the website so they can go pick up your project.
You can pick up the music at DraytonMusic.com.
Okay, that's D-R.
The physical CDs. Uh-huh. And the music is available on all of the formats.
Okay.
Amazon, iTunes, yeah. Spotify, all of those things. Apple Music. I think Google, was it Google? Is it Google Play? One of the, it's available on all
the platforms. Okay.
There's about 50 of them now, from what I understand.
It is. Just type his name in, y'all. That's all you guys to do it. Yeah. Anyway, Leslie, thank you so much. And I have thoroughly enjoyed this. And you have a good rest of the day, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. All right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was it. Well, that was a gas, y'all. I got to tell you. Leslie Drayton, this week's Artist of the Week. And just such an extensive musical background.